If you want my loving, all you got to do is subscribe on, just subscribe on the podcasting platform that you are. It really is helpful for me. I know it's annoying when people ask, but I'm just trying to get a little bit of traction on this. So a comment or a like or a subscribe or a rating is very helpful. Thank you. Also go to johnsavage.com and sign up at the newsletter if you want. No pressure, but there's some little things we're cooking up back here. Some cool little merchy ideas. And nice things for you. So check out, and they're going to be super limited edition, small ranges, because we're literally going to hand make them. I don't want to tell you what it is yet, but it's coming. So just subscribe, johnsavage.com/whatsyourpoison for that. Also, don't forget our lovely partners at Whiskey Brother. Order the whiskey from them because it makes us feel nice and them feel nice and makes us continue doing all these lovely things. All right, enough of me. Let's do this.
Yo. Welcome back to What's Your Poison. What to say? Lassie's a total legend, one of the biggest YouTubers in the country, if not the, makes incredible content, from the sketches you may have seen, or his Living with Afrikaans, a massively controversial and brilliant web series you got to check out about like an Afrikaans guy going to live in the township with his black gay boyfriend. It is hilarious and crazy, and we talk quite a lot about it in this, but this episode, you know, I've been dying to talk to Ulysses for such a long time. Done some projects with him, but we really got, I don't know, this, you know, the whiskey flows, he's drinking wine, and later, I think, you know, first of all, I have to endure the sound of my own voice in these podcasts, because the more I drink, the more I sound like a nincompoop. And I think I may have interjected quite a lot in this particular episode. But lovely and sweet and incredibly talented is Lassie's, where as the show gets deeper, we go into some really... This goes really deep. We're going into his family, his dad, his mum... particularly his incredible mum, and we get an, I sort of maybe overstepped the boundary of giving an opinion on what I think Lassie's, where some of the decisions he's made based on some of the things that happened with his family that doesn't want to repeat, and things just get really sort of it's quite odd but interesting, and I really like respect, I have so much respect for him. He's open, he goes with the punches, even if I'm being a total nincompoop dweeb. But I mean, what more can I say? This is a genuine and, episode of what this whole series is about. What's Your Poison? Getting to know someone over a little bit of the old drinky poo. And this is a legendary chat with the man himself, the Seizwe, on What's Your Poison?
La chwe chwe.
I feel like Americans are gonna call me la chichwe, like literally. They're gonna, I'm gonna call me la chichwe. I'm like, girl, hold on. Okay, it's French. It's French. Okay,
I call you la chwe chwe because I don't know when you. When we speak, you call me something as well. I don't know how you pronounce my name. How do you pronounce? Oh, my thing just fell over. How do you pronounce my name?
I say John Savage.
You don't say. You say like Savage. I don't know. You have your own way.
You know, sometimes when I'm feeling very French, I say Savage. Sometimes when I'm feeling very South African, I say Savage. You have Savage.
And when you're French, then I have to say Le Chichwe. Le Chichwe.
Le Chichwe. Bon appétit. Comme ça va? Ça va bien?
Le Chichwe, la Chwe Chwe. It is wonderful to have you on What's Your Poison. I'm excited to be chatting to you. Firstly, let's start with the most heaviest important things. What are you drinking and why?
What am I drinking and why? I love my wine. I even have the ice blocks that don't melt into the wine, because once there's water in your wine, it's normal wine. The reason
Hold
why
on
I'm
a second.
Drinking...
What is an ice block that doesn't melt in your wine? I'm not sophisticated to know about such technology.
I don't want to take it up with the knob. I'm going to stick my nasty fingers into this wine, and it's good because it's the long weekend, and the Lord has woken up. He has turned water into wine. So, ciao. You are drinking what the Lord.
Is it a rock, or is it actually, what is it, like a stone, a frozen rock?
Like a plastic. It's like plastic that's like a tube that has these molecules that can just keep being refreezed.
I mean, what 2021, what an amazing year.
I mean, you know what? 2021 has been quite an interesting year. It's literally the first quarter of the year. Officially today,
congratulations for surviving.
Oh, like with the fucked up year we had on 2020, like it was just, you know what? 2020 just showed whether you are rich, poor, middle class, it doesn't give a shit. You are.
This is what I think, that everyone who had a birthday in 2020 should just cancel it, and then your birthday. So we actually miss a year. And if you had a 30th birthday last year, you only have it this year. And the whole year gets wiped out. That's my plan.
True. I mean, you know what? There's many guys that have now turned 32. They are officially out of the calendar. So with your idea, they are now back in the calendar. You have given them a choice and, you know, reason to live. Because once you leave the calendar, it's time. You are a senior citizen.
Hold on. Okay. First of all, you're talking to a senior citizen based on the calendar that you've just spoken about, right? What is this? What is the calendar? What is 32 a cutoff year to be what? To be woke? To be cool?
So you know the calendar technically has 30 days and some months have 31 days. So that's when you reach the age of 30, that's when you're like, and then 31, you are visible in some months. You see, like July, you are visible. In April, you are non-existent. You know, we skip you. February, even worse, you don't even make it. 28 is the cutoff date, unless if it's a leap year. So, you understand, you are visible in some months, like December. You are there. You're saying, yeah, part of the youth. Once you move from 31 to 32, senior citizen, you are moving from ANC to ANC.
I will just tell you this, and I'm going to sound like an old grandpa. You're still a baby. And when you turn 32, you're going to realize in that moment how fucking young you are still at 32. Because I'm fucking 42. And I swear to God, I'm 17, and I know I don't remember anything past 17, 18, maybe 20.
But don't be. You're 42.
I'm 42. I'm 42. And this is the thing. Don't laugh at me.
Can I tell you a secret?
The weird thing about being 42 is this: when you were a kid at school, your teachers are 42, and they old fucking men to you. Now that I'm 42, I feel really like insecure about that because my teachers sucked and they were old men. And now I'm fucking 42 and I'm still a young person. So fuck you all. That's what I said.
Let me tell you something. Since you said you're 42, you know, my dating range. Let me tell you something about my dating range.
Okay.
it starts from 35 till, you know, when it's time for you to And I was like, that's because that range, I play with your wheel. I tell you, in your wheel, make sure that you understand we are in cookie. Because now, when you are 42, you don't have time to be playing games. You don't have time to be cheating on me. There's no time for all of those things. So you have time to literally sit home and I will be a poison.
Okay, so are you... basically, hold on a second. Do you date married men?
Sorry?
Do you date married men? Because I'm just trying to get the dynamic. What's going on here?
You see, married men, it's something that has been blessed, you know, and then now you're interfering with God's union. What? I can, like, you know, the length that I can go to is that, you see, when you're single, at least at least be single, but be in a relationship, because if all three of us had to go to Home Affairs, we'll all be
so
single.
Complicated. So complicated.
But now, if you are married and we go to Home Affairs, it's a problem, because the system will say, John, you are married. That's why you're single.
This is where you see you are smart, because actually you're after something that I really admire. When you get to 42, one of the things you start thinking about is efficiency. Like, what are the things that are not going to get in the way of the life that you're leading? And what you're saying is the problem with dating married men is that it's inefficient, because when you go to Home Affairs, it creates other problems. I like how you think. You're thinking along the same lines as me. I like that.
No, for me, imagine, I don't have problems in my life. Already, I've got too many problems. I've got 99 problems, and already, imagine a man could be one of them. And then
I couldn't imagine that a man is a problem for you.
Imagine, John, think about it. Ne? I'm dating you, and you're married. Ne? And we're pushing this thing. We're dating. It's delicious. And then you decide to kick the bucket. And then now, me at your funeral, I can't say a speech. I can't say a speech at your funeral. Your wife must stay on the podium and say, oh, John was such a beautiful man. Oh, such a me, now, myself, must sit in the audience. Never that. Could never be me. Never.
I can't imagine that happening to you. No way.
To save the problem, and if you are married, stay away from me. Don't even look in my direction. If you're married, don't look in my direction, because me, I tell you now, at your funeral, I will go up there and say, S John's side dish, girlfriend.
So you're gonna bust me at my funeral? That's a low blow.
Yeah. No, not even a look. I'll tell the truth and say, guys, John was a loving, loving man to the wife. And I'll say, to the wife, my condolences to you.
Oh, Jesus. That's fucking hectic. So
it
let me
is
just.
Our loss. It is our loss. We lost a great man.
Look, I'm 42. I'm close to the grave, man. This is a day that might be coming. No. Okay. This is where I just in all seriousness, this is the whiskey talking. A word is hard to pronounce, right?
Cheers.
And cheers to you. Cheers. As a, I mean, I know we know each other, right? But I seriously think you're the best person on the internet. Most people on the internet suck. And what you're doing has such good vibes. Like you've been so. I consider you to be a unicorn, because what you're doing is in a lane of its own. I see you doing amazing stuff. You know, I just happened to be on your Instagram live when you when it was announced from that Standard Bank thing that you raised R1 million that you got doubled for the fees must fall. The way you are operating, I don't know if it's strategic or just from the heart, it's really amazing to me, because I don't know, I find it very admirable that someone who is to me just a light, total lighty, is doing really big things in that space, and I appreciate you a lot. So tell me a little bit about maybe how you got started and what are you trying to achieve, or are you just an accidental genius?
half of the time, let me be honest, half of the time, all of this is like, it happens organically. The things that I plan necessarily, like 50% of the time, don't go according to plan. I usually call myself Professor X from the Powerpuff Girls, because he was trying to create these three beautiful girls when he added flower, everything nice. And then there was a moment where he said, these are the perfect ingredients to make the perfect little girls. And then there's a portion where it says, and then Professor X accidentally added Chemical X. You know, so usually in all my plans, there's some Chemical X that just happens. And it just gets superpowers. And no,
but I just want to say I'm being really real here. The few times we've met and we've spoken, the way you think about stuff is to me what is different. The difference, I know you're trying stuff, and I know that you've been extremely experimental with what you're doing, but your head is screwed on in a way that is different to most people that I know or have met, and that you are trying to do something, or you are making stuff that is really meaningful, whether accident or not. So I know that you try stuff, but you seem to have a bigger game plan, and that's what I'm after, is to try and understand what makes you tick.
So the big game plan is to show Africa to the world. I think right now, the world is looking for the next big thing, and they're looking to Africa. You know, right now, Africa, if you think about Africa, the world really looks to Africa in terms of, you know, oil, gold, you know, all of these minerals, the world comes to Africa too. Right now, China is trying to penetrate the African market so hard. I mean, the airport in Addis Ababa that is in Ethiopia is Chinese made, you know?
Yeah.
And my goal essentially is to expose the world about how rich in culture we are, how diverse we are. I mean, you know, the fact that being South African is so cool but so underrated, it bothers me because, you know, we are so different in accent, in tone, and the way we speak and the mannerisms, but the world doesn't understand South Africa. And that's one of my goals, is that I need the world to understand South Africa. Because to this day, when I call some of my American friends that are not woke, they'd be like, girl, and I would deliberately be like, girl, you know, I just fed my pet Simba. And they'd be like, oh my God, girl, you got a lion? I said, yes. How are you calling us? I said, girl, I'm sitting on top of this tree house with this network, and, you know, and they believe it, you know? And I genuinely want, right now, my biggest goal is to be the next global sensation, next global star, next global, you know, star, especially in Korea, in China, where this mass population, where now they say, oh my God, like how you say, let's ease away from South Africa.
I'll go there and teach them.
Yay, Lachidre from South Africa, and Koreans are going crazy. They're looking at my hair. They're like, oh my God, your hair is curly. I need my hair to be like yours. That's my ultimate goal, and I want to be known for it.
Here is the thing that I think that you have done that is smarter than anyone else. And that is, I'm going to tell you a little sub story here, because it was a big learning lesson for me. When I was in a rock band, that we were trying to break into the global market.
Yeah.
The harder we tried to break into the global market, the less it happened. I mean, we had record deals. We had all this shit happening. But when I made a movie that was hyper-localized, in other words, you wouldn't have been able to understand the movie unless you knew South African culture. That movie broke into the global market. And one of the things that taught me was, like, the more true you are to being to local culture without pandering to the international market, the more people actually relate to what you're doing. And that's the genius, I think, that you have managed to do. And that is, you I don't want to use the word authentic, because it's so boring, but like, when you make stuff, it never feels like you're pandering to a global audience. You're making it for hyper local people who fucking know the inside joke. But that's the shit that really seems to translate. And again, I don't know if you're doing that intentionally or not, but it's brilliant.
Thank you. I mean, you know, sometimes some of my content and my my videos that I produce and make, you know, when I make them, I usually just target an audience, target a crowd, target a demographic, and you know, when I create them, you know, as you said, you know, they are quite like for me, it just happens where it's just like, oh my gosh, like you guys actually love this. I'm like, oh my gosh, guys, no, stop it, you know. Like right now, I recently posted, I was recently back on TikTok, like serious full force, because I took like a small hiatus from making videos and stuff.
I think I saw your latest, is your latest TikTok the one about the credit card?
Yes.
Yeah, I checked it.
I was a nail technician, and what happened was that one of my colleagues told me that, babes, my customer that I'm doing the nails, her card has declined. And I was like, girl, actually, give me back my nails.
And I just love the fake hand, because to me, the genius of Lichwechwe is the fact that the homemade nature of it makes it so much cooler, like so much better.
True. And you know what? That video shocked me because in 24 hours, it got 1 million views. My God. You know, and that's the beauty about it. And I need to learn from it because this is where my strongest element is at. And this is where now the companies and all of these things try to jump on because they see 1 million views and they're trying to change me. And now, because I've learned, I must say no when certain things like that happen. Because what happens is that I will get a deal because they saw 1 million views in a day, people watched it, it was a skit, and then they want to turn a 45 second skit into 48 minutes long.
Yeah. Do you have an actual business manager? Because this is where I see, you know, this is the make or break for, to me, I look at you, has all the potential. I mean, more than potential. What you're doing is unprecedented. You're ahead of the game in so many ways. Do you manage your own shit or do you have someone who makes decisions with you, for you? Is there someone you listen to or do you just go, it's Lesizwe's decision?
I believe in having a team. I believe in having voices and people that will see differently. I mean, the only time you ever see yourself is when you look through the mirror, you know. So I do have a team that I have personally built myself. And my team is literally under 30s. And I have I call her a head of an administrator. She's the girl that she speaks to me every single day. You know, we go through my mails and we say, okay, cool. John wants us to do What's Your Poison? Let's see what's your poison about, you know. Do we think it's great? Okay, cool. I like John. Okay, what does John have on the table? And this is where now you get to understand yourself, because sometimes certain decisions that you make on your own are not necessarily the best. Because when you're on your own, 50% of the time, 60% of the time, you're correct. But sometimes you need a third eye, a third ear. You need to listen to what's currently going on outside and the opinions to say, okay, cool. If Tippy says don't do it, why are her reasons of don't do it? You know?
Well, let me ask you, be totally honest with me. If someone on your team totally disagrees with something you want to do, will you listen to them and not do it, or will you just go ahead and do it?
So there's two parts to that question. I listen with reason and I listen to my intuition. One thing about me, I have a strong intuition. My intuition never fails me. When I feel something is off, I cancel, I delete, I block, I make sure, because one thing about me, I'm a human being of experience. I want to experience something to learn from it. So I will experience some negative vibes and energies and I say, okay, cool. Never the fuck again will I enter that zone again. And then it's done. And then sometimes someone will say, oh, this is a don't do it. And then I question your statement and say, why do you say that? And she says, listen, what I know is there. If you do there, these are the repercussions. And are you willing to stand and go through all of those repercussions? And now you're like, okay, cool. I see that peripheral vision. And then you listen to intuition after the advice. You're like, that's what she said. And then your intuition be like, girl, don't do it. And you're like, don't do it. So it's a 50-50 thing.
That's amazing. I just want to say, I want to commend you on that, because I do think, I'll tell you this from myself. My biggest flaw for many years was buying into the dream of what I thought I was doing and not listening to my own intuition about stuff, like buying into some fucking fantasy bullshit. And when my intuition was saying like, don't do it, I was like, you shut up, because this is the right move. And it's taken me years to understand the importance of listening to yourself. So you are light years ahead of the game, which is great.
Yeah, it's very important to listen to yourself. Hey, like John, listen, there is no one that will ever lie to you other than yourself. Like, you see, one thing about intuition, we all have that feeling of, you know, when you're about to do something, you're like, should I do it? And your body's like, don't do it. Don't do it.
No,
don't.
But dude, there's 500,000 rand. You must do it. You must do it. You must do it.
And then you do it. And then you don't even get
up.
The 500,000 rand.
I'm with you.
Oh, you regret it. And you're like, oh my God. At each moment, you're like,
is why. This is where I put time and effort into you, because I'll tell you this, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. That time you came to Amped and spoke at our masterclass, I recognized immediately that there is not a lot of guys your age thinking, acting, and actually, you know, your views and what you do reflect, I think, the smartness you have about what you're doing, because a lot of guys have done to a certain extent what you're able to do, but not maintain it. But you are always changing the game. You're always doing something different. You're always trying new things. I mean, I would like to ask you this. What were you thinking when you started your Living with Afrikaans thing? Did it work for you? And what did you learn from it? Because to me, whether it worked or not, what I saw in what you were doing was a true innovator changing the game. And whether it worked for you or not, that's what it looks like when a creative genius does something that is way outside the box.
So with Living with Afrikaans, I mean, you know, this is one of my passion projects. I love it dearly. And the reason why, you know, I love it dearly is because, you know, in South Africa, white people, you know, a majority still have like a long way to go. It's like black people that still believe that white people should go from, like, white people should leave South Africa. And they don't understand, like, black people don't understand that we all need each other for the economy to survive. I mean, you know, I want to talk about black corruption. You know, black people with our corruption. It's in our genes, because for years during the apartheid system and era, we've been stolen from. We've been told that there's no money. And then you can see the fellow.
You've been fucked over big time.
Sorry?
I say you've been fucked over, seriously, like hardcore.
Yeah, hardcore, you know. So going back to now, the question of Living Afrikaans is that I wanted to create a web series where I'm not just talking to the black market, or but I do, I believe I do speak to a multiracial market, but I want to tap into that narrow, like one box, one dimensional market Afrikaner from Bloemfontein that still
who arrives at your at the fucking township door into a world outside of his. I mean, it's so fucking genius, the moments of him being in that space. It's groundbreaking.
Yeah. So my goal is to, you know, initially I want, like, it makes sense in my head. I want that typical Afrikaans guy to first be like, what the fuck is this? You know, oh, look at this guy wearing a wig and he's mad. And then afterwards, you know how homophobes like low-key watch gay porn at night? I want those typical Afrikaans like guys that are like, what the fuck is living with Afrikaans? This is racist. At night, he must be on his phone watching it and chuckling. I want that. That's my goal. I want him to watch at night and to go into his boys group chat and say, Dilla, this is fucking funny, man. Watch this. What this fuck is.
No, you want him to say to his boys, this is so cucked, don't watch it, but at home he's watching it. He can't help it.
Literally.
Did you get any? I mean, I don't know. I don't watch the sort of socials and stuff. Did you get negative feedback at it all? All I know is I met you in an airport lounge where you were kind of saying, I'm not getting the numbers I really wanted from this. And that I think might be because as a disruptor, what you're doing is changing the game. That doesn't have commercial appeal. What you're doing is making an impact on culture. So did you have repercussions from what you were doing with that particular series?
So I mean, you're right about the numbers that I really wanted with this. And I think it's more of I'm here for a long time, not for a good time situation. Because if I was here for a good time, a long time, I would have been done with this, you know. And it's just simply just making history, you know, and just the repercussions of it is just, you know, getting the end of the stick. I know I get a lot of end of the stick, and just also working with brands. A lot of Afrikaans brands have like red flagged me and said, "Oh no, living on Afrikaans," because we're doing season 3 of Living with Afrikaans now. And we try to get brands to jump on and, you know, jump on and try, you know, marketing things on our series. But it's more like they're like, nah, you know, and because the Afrikaans market is quite niche and the reason why it's so niche is because it's powerful. Mm. Afrikaans people come out in numbers.
Yeah.
One thing about Afrikaans nation I respect the most. So when you think about Afrikaans singers, actors,
it's country music and Afrikaans music. They support themselves in a way that nobody else does. All of us are jealous and wish that our cultures would support us in the same way that those two people do. Those groups do.
Literally. I mean, if you think about an Afrikaans concert, they sell out in minutes. So yeah. my goal is I want to be the first black person to tap into that market and nail it and seal it. And listen, I want to make Johan van Staden from Bloemfontein, when they see me, they go, oh my God, Boki,
you
must take a Bensi.
You know the little Nas story, hey?
No, tell me.
So little Nas... I mean, this is crazy.
Oh, not Lil Nas. Oh my God!
Sorry. Oh Jesus.
Don't do it. Lil Nas.
Lil Nas.
Yes.
Sorry, I pronounce it like the country stars, not the hip hop stars. So you know the Lil Nas story and the Billy and the country charts and the Billy Ray Cyrus collab, right?
I know the whole story, backstory. I am a fool.
Do you know this story? Do you know that in December they launched Lil Nas? To check, I've already adopted the pronunciation. He did a digital concert on Roblox, which is like an app that kids use. They had 200 million people at the concert. 200 million kids worldwide were at his digital concert in December of 2020.
That's massive. And think about it. Lil Nas before even Old Town Road, when you listen to his story, when you listen to him, how he reiterates the struggle of tapping into country music, all country music supporters were like, nope, we're not going to support this. This is a band. We're not going to do this. They were literally.
Yeah.
And it took Billy Ray Cyrus to jump on the joint. And it blew up.
I got an idea for you. So I know someone I know fairly well is Kurt Darren.
Hold up. Before you even finish, you, after this call, need to get me, Kurt Darren, on a WhatsApp call, and he needs to jump onto Living with Afrikaans ASAP because we're shooting this beast next week, okay?
I will tell you this about Kurt Darren. The dude is the coolest, most open-minded, radical. He is game for fucking anything. I will tell you something. I'm going to give you a short story. Do you know about, have you ever seen my movie that I made? I made a movie that took me to the
link. You haven't sent me the link, John.
Okay, I'll send it to you, right? So this film got me to the Cannes Film Festival, right? And I made a movie on fucking nothing, bro, on no monies. And the movie is the story of an English-speaking brand trying to break into the Afrikaans market without being able to speak Afrikaans. I did not know Kurt Darren at the time, but I met him in a casino. I think we were at, what's the casino in Joburg called? Monte Casino, whatever the fuck it's called. I met Kurt Darren at Monte Casino, and I said to him, I want to do a scene where you perform a gig to rhinos. There's no people there, just rhinos. And that's all I said. And he was like, bro, you just tell me the date, I'll be there. And I made a scene in my movie where Kurt Darren arrives on set and does a gig to rhinos. That is a testament to a man who is game for fucking anything. And I think Kurt Darren and you will get on like a fucking house on fire. Kurt Darren is actually fucking awesome. And he is the key for you. You are the key for him. And if that's all that comes out of this conversation, I'm fucking excited about it.
John, make it happen.
It will happen.
Be my poison. Be my poison.
Consider it a done deal. I'm going to call him tomorrow. And I'm telling you, the next call will be to you. I'm excited to see what happens. But I want to credit. I want the credit to say executive producer John Savage. I don't care about that shit. I'm just joking.
The whitey news coming out.
Yeah, I got to own everything. I have to own you, black people. I have to own you. Is that what you think? Tell me a little bit about how you got into doing content for YouTube. I mean, you are the YouTube god, and I'm interested in knowing.
No, don't call me a YouTube god. No, I'm scraping the surface, like literally. I think personally, I'm just started. Like people think, oh my God, you've made it. No.
Okay, no. I know that's how it feels. And I'll tell you why that is. And this is why I'm interested in, this is why I want to work with you. I think that, this is going to get me into trouble. I think that the YouTube monetization system is bullshit. I think that you should be doing a lot better than you are based on what you're doing. And if there was a platform that didn't dominate the world that you were on, you should be doing better stuff. And where I'm sitting in the world is that I am focused on the monetization of content. So, for example, this is not a sales pitch. I'm just putting it out there. I am working with amazing people on their podcasts and getting them monetized in a serious way, not like the sort of dynamic advertising that comes with the system, but getting serious brands to pay serious money to be involved with people who are making magnificent content. You are one of those people that is making groundbreaking content that it can get a million followers on TikTok like this. You should be doing a lot better, in my opinion. And maybe, I don't know where I'm going with that. I'm just saying, I think that, I know you feel like you're getting started, but I do not know many people who are able to garner the following that you get on a piece of content. And that's why I call you the god of podcasting, not to be funny about it, but what you are doing, people dream of doing and are not doing. You're doing it. There's nobody I know is making content like you who's getting the following you're getting. You are the guy. There's no one ahead of you, except for that dude who, according to the YouTube stats, does like, I don't know what he is. He does like, what, wildlife videos or some shit? It's like pics of lions. Okay, lions and crap.
Animals, whatever. Animals worldwide. Like, listen.
Fuck him. I love wild animals, but fuck him. You are creating content. He's not. Lions are not making your content, and neither are zebra. You are.
Yeah, you know what? Like, you know, my chat about the monetization of YouTube is that if, for example, what you predict of if I had to make more, like you always say, like, oh, this is a, I wish you could make more from the monetization of YouTube and etc. because you deserve more, etc. Now think about your Mr. Beasts. If I'm making more, how much of the Mr. Beasts? They are going to literally be billionaires of,
but
of
they,
YouTube.
But hang on a second. Let me ask you a question about Mr. Beasts. How is it possible that this guy is doing videos where he is selling houses for $1, right? Either something magical is happening, or that guy is earning a fuck ton more money than you are. Because I'll tell you one thing, Lassie's, where you are not selling houses on your YouTube channel for R1. That's what he's doing.
True, but you must remember the journey of Mr. Beast and how he got there, and also the market and monetization. There's also something called like the CPM, you know, cost per minute, and which countries watch your videos. And also, one thing about Mr. Beast is that he appeals to a global market. If I go to my search, my YouTube creators tab, you'll find that I appeal to mostly sub-Saharan countries. So your Botswana, your Namibia, your Lesotho, your Zambia, your Zimbabwe, and Kenya. Those are the countries where I think I dominate the most. And those are the countries maybe that have a low CPM. So in order for me to then maybe make money off YouTube, I need to now target countries with the high CPM. Where, for example, in America, did you know that in America, there's one ad that you can't skip? There's one ad that you can't skip, and I think there's a third optional ad. So there's three ads that they play. And those are like expensive ads, you know. And with that, creators get paid. Like, for example, I know a creator that when they get like 1,000 views in YouTube, it's an automatic like 500 rand, technically, you know. And in South Africa, 1,000 views is like what, 100 rand, 10 rand, 50 rand. It's just making sure that you know your audience, you know what you're monetizing, and you know how you do it. So, yeah.
Okay, well, let me, okay, I'm going to go deep on this with you.
Yeah.
Let's just take YouTube out of the equation, because I'm going to just say for a moment, I understand that YouTube is a partner responsibility for your success. But right now, people engage Lesizwe's content, sorry, Lechwechwe's content, not because it's on YouTube. I mean, you go on TikTok, that's where you get a million people to follow, right? And at the moment, when a brand pays, let's say a million rand, I'm sure that's an unrealistic number, to be on YouTube, you're probably seeing 2% of that. You're probably seeing 5 rand, let's say, of the million rand that goes in there.
Yeah.
But if you started your own, and I'm not saying this is what you should do. I'm just putting into perspective. I understand what you're saying. I know, and I'm just backtracking to say, I know that YouTube has been responsible to building up your following, but YouTube doesn't own your following. You do. So if you were to start your own channel where brands paid 1 rand and you earn 50% of the income or 60% of the income, and you got a million followers on there, I still think people would go there to follow your content. People aren't on TikTok looking for you, they're going to TikTok because that's where you are. You have power in South Africa, in my opinion, that YouTube doesn't have, in the sense that, yes, they put the platform together and they've made it generic, but the power is Lechechwe, not in YouTube. So to me, I feel, again, not my place. It's your business. It's what you're doing. I'm not trying to do anything dramatic, but you deserve a better deal. In the same way, like, do you know Vevo? Do you know what Vevo is?
No. Vevo, V-E-V-O, right?
That's right. So, right, record labels went to YouTube and said, listen, YouTube, you don't fucking own our music and our artists, and they've all got our music videos on YouTube, so we want a better deal. We're going to start Vevo, and every cent you make, we want to make a cent as well. So we're 50-50 in anything that happens in Vevo. So where you earn, as Lesizwe, $1 of the $20, the record label earns $10 of the $20, right? Because the YouTube has to say, oh shit, Universal Music, you are a big player in this space, and so we can't do the same deal with you. I'm not saying this is what you, I'm just saying you have this value to YouTube that maybe is more than what you're, and that's the only thing I'm sort of trying to illustrate here, is that the power here is not YouTube or TikTok. The power here is Lechwechwe, because you've made content, you've built your following, and now's your time to fucking take control of that shit. I don't know. What do I know? Nothing. I'm watching from the sidelines. So this is an opinion. You can reject it as much as you want to hear it or not hear it.
I guess, you know what, sometimes these things happen where, you know what, but also, John, you're forgetting the most important thing. It's just the admin process of all of this. YouTube makes it simple for creators. When you have your own site and your own subscription, yes, it's amazing that you're getting all of the revenue, but you need to maintain, you need to pay these fees. Basically, you're now a shop owner. You pay rent, you pay electricity, you pay for equipment, you pay all of these things. Instead of, and I know maybe it may sound a little bit condescending or dumb, but I personally would rather work with like YouTube on a partnership basis, because that's what YouTube is. They tell you that grow in order for us to reward you. You need to have, sorry, I have hiccups. So for example, I think we need to have over a thousand subscribers or something like that. Your watch time needs to be something over so many hours that you get monetized. So basically, they encourage. Sorry, let me hold my breath. I've got hiccups. It's the wine.
Okay, I will hit. Yeah, you hold your breath because this will become the trailer for my podcast. Holding your breath doesn't work, by the way. Okay, I'm
It
gonna try.
does. It does. I got it. Done. It's gone.
Well, I don't believe you. What? I don't believe you.
It's like YouTube. Simple.
It's like
Done.
YouTube. Okay.
Simple things.
This is the whiskey talking, but let me ask you a question. Would you rather make it really easy and earn 1 million rand, or spend 1 million rand and earn 1 billion rand? I'm challenging you on.
So, question back
You,
to you, right?
I think you are underestimating. I
No, my
think you
question
are
back to
undervaluing what it is you have to offer.
you.
That's my
No,
pitch.
question back to you, right? Where am I going to get that 1 million rand from?
That is not a reasonable question because I'm asking you about what you're saying to me is I'm happy with the way things are because it's easy for me. And
It's
I'm
not easy.
putting on the table for.
Why? Listen, we live in a very complicated world. Let's be real, John. We live in a very complicated world, right?
I'm
You.
fucking real about that. I'm on the same page when it comes to that.
Yeah, but listen, we live in a very complicated world. You starting something now, yes, fantastic. It's capital, it's equity, it will one day blow up. But in the process, let me tell about my life story. My mother was a nurse, right? And her being a nurse, she worked day and night. She never had time for her kids, time to take care of herself. Literally, it was just her and working, right?
Where was your dad, Lesizwe?
My daddy, let me tell you something about my daddy. My daddy was a very rich man, but he just didn't have the time. He was just a financial dad. Like, he just was that guy that would send money every month. In a year, I would see him once or twice.
So he didn't
And
live
that
with your
was
mom.
okay. Yes, it was just me and my mom, you know. And it was okay because I was used to it, you know. So, my mom, what killed my mom was when she took an executive decision, right, to change her cycle. She decided that I also want to be a business owner. I've been a nurse for over 10 years. So let me make a nursing, let me create a nursing school and let me teach other people how to be nurses. The problem is, especially amongst a lot of people, is that we want to create this company equity business, you know, capital, because we're seeing other companies do it and etc. And we're like, okay, cool. I want to also be part of the change. But we want to be part of the change, but we're not informed. We're not educated. We're not wise and woke about the pros and cons of owning a business. My mom jumped into that business of tertiary education. The first year was a little bit tricky. Second year, I mean, she did it as part-time, you know. She'd work during the week and Saturday to Sunday she'd be training students how to be nurses, you know, to be accredited. And she even got branches. She got a branch in Benoni, she got a branch in Springs, and things were looking promising. But things started taking a left turn when she didn't handle her administration process properly. Because she was not aware about these certain things, about making sure that her branches are in check, making sure she collects, she goes and she checks and all of these things. And then there comes internal wars of, oh, you're stealing money, oh, you're doing this, oh, you're doing this with my company. No, I'm going to take my certificate away. I'm going to take my certificate away. I'm going to run my own show. My mom in 2016, January, well, let's just say 2015, December, it started getting shaky. 2016, January, that's when, you know, when you know, as you switch on the TV and the DSTV sign says, please pay for your DSTV. That's when I was like, oh my gosh, it's about to be tricky here. My mom took an executive decision to run her own show. She got her own branch. And she just said, you know what, I'm going to run the show. And in running her show, the biggest mistake she did was to take her savings account and dump it into something that's not working. It's not working at all. And I then tried to do a case study, but let's continue with the storyline. She kept on taking her savings, into this business that's just not making a profit at all. July, August, September, she developed a heart condition. It was bad. My mom had, she would, while driving, I remember one moment, she would have a heart attack while driving. She couldn't breathe. She would vomit. And, you know, I'd like, mom, go home. Second time it happened, we were at a mall. I was just trying to get pills. And she vomited. And I told her, like, it was dizzy. And she was weak. And her body just caved in. And I was like to her, you know what? Like, let's go to the hospital. At that time, you know, it's September. There's no medical aid. There's nothing. There's nothing. We're going to a public hospital. Go to Bara. They resuscitate her. They put her on machines. You know, they just tell her that her heart is inflamed. It has liquids. And it's just all complicated. Looks promising. And, you know, she recovers, you know, she's been in the hospital for weeks. She moves to the section now where it's the ghetto, because Baragwana has good sections and they have bad sections. And now when you're recovering, they take you to the bad section, because now, you know, you're part of the masses. You'll see yourself. She's recovering. Fantastic, great. Now it's around December, and my matric dance is coming up, and I think she knew she was going to pass on, and she's like, you know what, let's go, let us, you know, just do our thing. My daddy, may his soul rest in peace, but my daddy was just like, child, you're going to see yourself. I'm not going to contribute to your matric dance. I'm not going to be part of this shenanigans. You're just going to see yourself. My mama said, you know what? I'm going to spend my last cent on you. We maxed out her credit cards. We maxed out a lot of shit. Then she's like, where do you want to cut your hair? I said, I'm going to cut my hair at a barbershop. Because usually, back in the day, I used to cut my hair under a tree. You know, that's how ghetto we were. I said, I want to cut my hair at a barbershop. I want to get all the nice things. I went to the barbershop and I looked at the mirror and my mom collapsed on the couch and she passed on the spot. And going back, it's simple to say, this is where create your own thing. This is where what potential to that. Simple. The difficult part is the engine. It's running the engine. It's understanding the engine. It's understanding that YouTube is happening. This is that YouTube is an overly developed company. They have got systems, they've got protocols, they've got all of these things. They've got, I think, over 1,000, 10,000, I don't know how many employees work at YouTube, but they have all of these systems in place. And I, as an individual now, creating a website that has all my videos, now trying to direct traffic to my videos, not knowing the metrics. You must remember one thing about YouTube also. They also help creators get discovered. Now you're on your own. You're trying to get discovered. You're trying to get your videos up. It's a disaster. It's a recipe for disaster. I don't want to ever go through the same route my mom took in any business avenue. I would rather go through system and protocols that have been in place. If I have to start something new, great, I'll start it on my own. But I will never leave a platform and say, oh, YouTube is paying me 1 rand, I could be earning 10 rand. YouTube is paying me 1 rand because there's a potential I could earn 10 rand if the metrics, the system, the algorithm works in my favor. Why till this day, John, Mr. Beast has not left YouTube and created his own website? Why? Till this day, why hasn't Mr. Beast decided to go, okay, let me create my own website, let me get the brands I work with to jump on and sponsor me and boost me? Why?
Do you want me to answer that question?
You can answer.
Okay, so firstly, I just want to go back and say, I really appreciate you telling me that story. That is, I mean, a story of, I have no words for what you've just said, and I'm not diminishing anything you've said in any way. But what I will say is that, I mean, your mother sounds like an incredible human being, someone I have never met, but admire the step she took. I don't think she made the wrong decisions, in my humble opinion. I think the outcome was tragic, but not she made great decisions. And I'm saying, again, not to put pressure on you, there is trauma attached to her great decisions with you. And the thing that shows that to me is that you have over 1 million followers on Instagram, and that isn't YouTube. You got 1 million people to like your latest video on TikTok, which isn't YouTube. And I am not saying that you have to go start your own channel, but I feel that your potential to greatness may be hidden or trapped inside the trauma of what I believe to have been a legendary move by your mother that you have associated with the purpose for tragedy. And it's very complicated.
Yeah, I think, you know what, like, I hear you and I get you, but we live and we learn, and I don't want to make the same mistake my mom made. I still say today, and I remember telling her, I was like, Mom, just go back to nursing, go back and work at the hospitals, bitch. You're dying, ho. You know, I didn't say it that way, no, but I just said, Mom, just go back. And she's like, I will go back. And she said, I will go back. And that's the thing.
What would your mom think of what you're doing? Okay, I've got two questions for you. One, how did what happened to your mom lead to you starting the path that you're on? And second of all, can you, what would she say to you seeing you today doing what you're doing?
I think my mom would have been so proud. She is one person that is really, really so hardworking, determined, and focused, you know. In the beginning, she didn't understand what I was doing as like many didn't understand what I was doing. Many tried to shut me down. Many didn't get what I was trying to do, the narrative I'm trying to speak. Like just the fact that a guy is wearing a wig and imitating a woman was just very absurd in South Africa.
Why did you start wearing wigs?
I just have a thing for hair. I remember when growing up, I think even my sister can attest to this. I used to love dressing up. I used to love dressing up as fictional characters that I've watched. You know that do let me tell you something about John. I would watch Lara Croft. I remember there was Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, the movie, and
Angelina Jolie, bro.
Angelina Jolie, yes, the original Lara Croft. So what I would do, right, is that I would take a polo neck, right, and in that polo neck, I would put it on my head. So the polo neck, right, has a neck piece, so that is already covered. And then I take what is it? Just a bandana or something to tie up my hair, and I tie it up. And then already, so you know, there's two arms and the body part, and then I plait the Lara Croft hair, and then I would use our passage as like an obstacle course, and I would like glide on the floor, and then I climb on the kitchen cupboards, and I treat it like trees, and then I'd get my plastic guns, and then I'd shoot the stove, and oh my God, I would jump onto the table, onto the kitchen counters, and that I'd live in my head. And also with that Catwoman movie. When I watched it was an amazing movie. And then I watched it now, because I watched it when I was like 6, 7. And also draw Catwoman eyes and that and the mask. And so we were a family that would slaughter a lot. And guess what I would do, John?
I can't imagine.
I would literally take a nail clipper on the chicken. I would remove the nail. And then I would put it, I'd glue it onto the gloves, my mom's gloves, so
You
that I
are
could have
kidding.
it. I'm dead serious. And then after that, I would be Catwoman. Listen, so my love for dressing, you know, has been a thing, and I've always been dressing up and stuff. So only then I discovered, you know, that I actually researched a lot of, I used to watch a lot of American YouTubers, I'd see them do it, and I said, why not let me do it, you know, South African wise. And I did it for like the first year was like 2014, 2015, and then I boomed like 2016, 2017. That's when one of my first videos went viral, and then the rest was history.
Amazing. Okay, last question, and then I will let you go. You have not mentioned, I mean, I'm going to be really honest with you about this, but when in the early days when I started following you, which was, 1886, when I was starting to, I thought the fact that that Kanye Bao was your sister was actually just an online joke, because I checked how you were like doing all these hilarious Instagram posts and all this other stuff. But now I realize that's a real thing. Tell me a bit about your relationship with your sister and how you guys grew up together, if you don't mind.
So I discovered Kanye, if I can correctly remember, when I was like six. I think, to be honest, like if I throw back properly, even though like her version of the story is different, I really, really remember her. Wait, like 2006, 2007, when she first came through to my mom's house in Pimble in Soweto with her Lamborghini with my dad.
How come you didn't know she was your sister?
My daddy's dead. That's a question that you need to ask my daddy.
And is that something you never asked him? Or is it something you don't want to talk about?
One thing about my daddy has a lot of kids. My daddy had a lot. We are like 10 siblings, you know? So I think that was the first, should I say first sibling I ever got introduced to? And then afterwards, one by one. I think, let's just call it that. She's my first sibling I got introduced to. And then after that, she just validated my dreams. She was just like, you know, she was that police officer at the police certified by me and says, listen, it's valid. She was like, okay. Because in 2006, she was like the it thing. She was everywhere, newspaper, TV commercial. And that time there wasn't social media, eh? She was just everywhere, spoken about, talked about, literally. And I was like, oh my God, when I grow up, I want to be as famous. I want to be, not like her, but I just want to be my own version. But she just certified my ID copy of, yeah.
Do you have a relationship with her now?
I do. I have a really strong, great relationship with her. I think she's one of the best people to have in your corner. She's like a mother to me, you know.
That's amazing.
Great advice, great practical solutions to my industry problems, and just the way I see life, you know. Technically, for me, when I got famous, the certain things that I learned from my sister that I implement till this day. One of the things is that I learned is that whether you're having a very bad day or a bomb-ass day, people don't care. People just want to take a picture with you, and you need to motherfucking smile. You need to be the lessees that they see online, because those are the people that are paying for your bill. Those are the people that will make sure that month end you are covered. And those one of the lessons that I learned from my sister. One thing about my sister is that even if on a bad day, Kanye will still take a picture with you. And one thing that I also learned is that whenever you go, I think you can also test this, that whenever you're on set, some of these stars, you know, maybe like, I'm a star. I'm not going to talk to John Savage.
Until, I will tell you something.
Until they discover who is John Savage. And then they're like, oh my God, it's Jensen. Hi, John.
I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. Here is some inside thing for you that I've learned as well. And that is, you know, the weird thing about opportunities is that it's still... unfortunately, and I do not condone this, it's a very small community of people who do most of the work. And if you are difficult to work with, the community goes, oh, fuck, too difficult to work with. Doesn't matter how big a star you are. Like, let's work with that dude because he's easy to work with. He arrived on time. He was fucking professional. That's the guy you're going to work with. I don't condone it, but I see it a lot. And that is that the people who are easy to work with are favored in a way, in a weird, invisible way.
True. And being a favorite is basically kissing ass. Proper.
I don't. No. Well, that I don't agree with. No, I don't believe that. Well, talking about mindset.
Listen, you know why I say proper kissing ass is because at the end of the day, when you are working in show business entertainment, sometimes you find yourself in a predicament where you are like a diva and you're like a star. Oh my gosh. I do my work. I'm professional. I get the viewers. I get the ratings. but I treat everyone like shit, right? But in terms of, and I think we need to also as society normalize positive and the negative of kissing ass, right? Positive of kissing ass is that you get to interact with people in human way. Kissing ass sometimes doesn't mean, oh, John, I like your hair color. Oh, John, I like kissing ass sometimes means, hey, John, how are you today? You're fantastic. I'm just, oh, listen, I'm not having a great day. You're like, oh, okay, cool. If you want to listen, listen, you know? The fact that John has decided to disclose something that is bothering him, you never know. John might say, you know what? I like that Lesizwe guy. I like because, you know what, he's human and he treats everyone like human. And that works because in my kissing ass of asking, how are you? You have waited, said, you know what, I'm not well. My dog doesn't want to cut its nail and it's scratching me at night and I'm so frustrated. And then now you're sitting in a meeting where CNN and he's like, you know what, and it happens, it's a human thing. I come on top of mind you because of something, and actually you'll be sitting in a CNN meeting, you'll be thinking about your dog, and you think about, oh, Nasizwe actually asked me about my dog.
I'm gonna disagree with you on this and I'll tell you why. Look, I am a massive Lesizwe advocate. I mean, and as you know, I'm casting you as the lead in my film. I try to bring opportunities to you, and I'll tell you why. That, like, I meet a lot of and work with a lot of big stars, and to be totally frank, most of them suck ass, right? And it's not. And you've never done ass kissing with me. Well, maybe you have. Maybe you think you have. But what I do remember is this. Okay, maybe, you know, you're laughing now. So maybe you think that's what you're doing. But I do remember this. When I worked on a project with you, which was the Amp Masterclass for YouTube, number one, you came to a meeting that we had set up the day before, which is also something that doesn't happen. Like, I'm in these meetings a lot where someone doesn't even bother fucking arriving. We had quite a deep and meaningful conversation where we spoke about what I was trying to achieve with Amped. You arrive the next day on time. You fucking sat down on that stage and you put your soul on that motherfucking stage. You fucking killed it. It was outside of your comfort zone. You were speaking honestly. People were asking you personal questions. You followed through on what we had spoken the day before. And even in how you did it and what you did, I went like, okay, I feel like I'm in the presence of a global superstar that people have not seen yet. The way you behaved to me, and even to, you know, even now, and not that this is anybody's business, we had a date last week. There was load shedding. We had a second date. You accidentally forgot it. I'm not saying this to criticizing you. You came back to me and apologized and said, let's set up another date. You even came back to me today when I called you and said, tonight's the only night I'm available, and here we are doing this. What I'm looking for to work with is someone who's fucking says they are what they say they are. And I'm not looking for you to ask me how, you've never asked me how my dog is. And by the way, my dog's fine. You have being consistent about who you have said you are and how you act. When I see you on Instagram doing amazing things for other people, this is consistent with how you have said in a discussion with us, like how you will act. And to me, that is what is special about you and why I love talking to you and love that you're on my show and will do anything for you, not because you've ever sort of ask me about my dog, because finding people who are true to what they believe in is the rarity. And I believe you are, you know, not to, you know, what you did with Afrikaans, the Living with Afrikaans, whether it worked or not, showed to me who you are more than you could ever say.
Thank you. Making me blush. And yes, living with Afrikaans is going to be a success. I speak it to the universe, from my mouth to the universe's ears. And my thing is just that I just want to tell my story. I just want to be able to be simple, like on a history textbook. I want kids in the next, like, a decade, I'll still be alive. The next, is it ancient? You know, maybe when they say, usually it's before Christ, after Christ, and then whatever, whatever, whatever. In the future, when there's like teleporting, telegraph, and children are learning about education, I want to be in that textbook. I want to be the projector. Like, they must say,
I remember.
Oh, yeah, BL. I remember.
I remember, yeah. Before the Sizwe, bro.
Yeah, before the Sizwe, after the Sizwe, literally. That's my goal. It's just like, this guy was a pioneer. He shaped and changed the South African narrative, the African narrative, the world narrative. You know, I want to be the Beyonce of the videos. I want to be the Sizwe of the videos. And I will, slowly but surely, because one thing about me, they will never take my power.
Lechwechwe, it's been an honor having you on What's Your Poison. I love you big time, bro.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been, my wine is finished, so.
Good timing. I hope you enjoyed this episode of What's Your Poison. Go to johnsavage.com/What's Your Poison to subscribe to our newsletter, find out more exclusive things, get access to merch and innovation stuff. Also, I don't know why I said innovation. I meant information, but it came out innovation. I like that word. If you're on Apple, just hit the 5-star rating. Why not? It won't hurt you and it will make me feel nice. If you're on the Spotify, recommend it. Share. Sharing is good. Sharing is caring. Oh, I can't believe I said that. No, I'm annoyed now. I'm just going to finish.